soccer matters.
Quick shot score! The US with Dempsey!
The Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid, gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, our best of version. Let's get started with hour number two. As always, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. They are bilingual. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, you get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, you need the best. Get the best. And the best in personal injury attorneys is the Daspit Law Firm. Let's get started.
It's always a blend of the domestic and international we want. And certainly our next guest does have that. He is Eric Sviatchenko, the Dynamo center back. He joins us now. Eric, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so at the time of taping this, I heard you were in the weight room. How much weight work do you do during the regular season?
We do actually quite a lot in Houston Dynamo, more than I've experienced previous. I think it's kind of different philosophies, different clubs. How do they work about that? So it actually tend to be quite a lot of gym works here in this club, but it works out because we want to be a team who can press forward, who can be dominant also without the ball, and you have to have that kind of physicality, and that's where you go into the gym and you work on different things to keep up with that. So yeah, we have a lot of gym work.
Climate wise, now that you're into this a little bit, you're playing more, you know, when I was speaking to you the first time, you were still coming back from injury. How have you adjusted to that, and how difficult has that been? Because when I came here to play on a pro team in the 80s, it took a while for me to get adjusted to it.
It's certainly a big factor and a difficult factor. I'm getting used to the training now in the heat. I think I've going through the training sessions pretty well. I feel I'm in my kind of habitat in some way, that I know what to do. But I would still say that when we play at Shell Energy Stadium, it kind of holds the heat on a next level. So the game we played LAFC was my first initial kind of heat exposure, and it was a battle. It was going through 45 minutes of being in kind of a fog, just going grinding through it. But then it's getting better and better, and I'm just thinking, imagine how tough I have it, and I'm getting used to it in some way over the past next months. But the guys who's coming here to play us must feel horrible. So it has to be that factor as well when we play teams, that we can last longer, we can outplay them also with this mindset of we're used to it. If we take care of our bodies, then we need to get used to it. But of course, it's in Denmark, we have comfortable heat, nice in the summer, and then you're exposed to kind of a blanket of heat where you are just wrapped in it. So it's I'm getting along, but it's still something that I need to get used to.
Eric Sviatchenko joining us, career at Celtic, Midtjylland, also the Danish national team. It's pretty remarkable. I assume you're probably hydrating like you've never hydrated before in your life, right?
I am, for sure. And we have hydration tests quite often. So our nutritionist, Hannah, takes care of that. So that's a good thing for us that we know we are on top of that. But I'm just used to having a bottle of water everywhere I go, and I'm telling my family as well, because they came over now for the remainder of my contract, which is nice to have them here with 2 months without them. So I tell my kids that you have to hydrate, and think, why? But it's because it's so warm here. It's something else.
Yeah. Eric Sviatchenko joining us. So look, I found out about your father. Your father is an incredibly noted man. I was so interested in his career as an architect based on politics and in the Ukraine and Russia. And and worldwide, and he was an artist, and even there was a collaboration with you there, Close Up and Private, which was more of a fashion related, I think, a photography series. Exactly. I mean, this was incredible for me to see your father. So tell me a little bit about your dad, and then take it into, you know, he was very artistic. Does that mesh with football in you? Because I think it does.
So we always, when we talk about our careers, my dad and I, we always kind of equal them in some way. We always measure it upon someone likes my father's work, someone doesn't, someone likes my playing style, someone doesn't. So, and we're always kind of at an exam when you have had a series of paintings done, then you come and you show it, you exhibit it, and people come and they either buy it or they don't in some way. So it's a really tough world to be in. That's the same with the football world, that sometimes you wait it too low, and sometimes it's perfect, you know. So these conversations we have, and the highs and lows are amazing in football. So are they in the artistic world. But yeah, my father has always been a big inspiration for me and my siblings in regards to both with art, fashion, aesthetics, and the way of living as well. My father came with my mom more than 30 years ago to Denmark with only one suitcase, and wanted to make a living for the entire family based off being an artist. And back in the Soviet Union, before it imploded, you didn't have all the opportunities. And that's why my father came to Denmark and said, hey, this is a place where I can explore. This is a place where I can actually liberate myself a little bit more from the kind of conform system that he was in. And since then, it's just been amazing to be as a son. And in that world, we have always been very close to my father, in the sense of he's taken us on multiple journeys around Europe. Either he took my sister or my brother or me, and we traveled, like going on a fishing trip. We then went to Milan instead, or Paris or London, and went to different museums and galleries. So we grew up really fast and knew how to be in adult world very, very early in our lives. So I would say I'm cultural stimulant from my father's and mother's really like persistent way of giving us the cultural side of it. So yeah, I'm happy with that, and exploring everywhere we are. It's nice now. I'm in Houston. I've been to the Menil Collection, which was an amazing experience for me. Something,
one of my favorite places, by the way.
Yeah,
And it's free. It's the most amazing collection. And she could have put that in Paris. You know, there was a lot of cities bidding for her collection.
That's amazing. But I was stunned to see those. So many of my favorites, so many of my family's favorites. I was just close up with them in some way. So that was a great experience. And then you asked to Close Up in Private. That's something that we started back in 2009. When the block culture came, and my father is obviously from another generation, but he has his take on it. So he wanted to inspire whoever wants to go on online to watch Close Up in Private. So it was kind of a browsed thing. You can browse down and get inspiration to your everyday life of how to dress. But it wasn't so much about the brands. It was more about the style and how you put colors together. So it's kind of how he does collages. He just did it in photography with me as a male model. At that point, I was 18 years old, which was a fun thing to be with my father doing these things. And then since then, we have had a lot of collaboration with different brands or takes on different things, but we had our saying. So it has been a nice thing, and something that is now worked upon by on the side, and it's involved into something else. Also, we have another company. So we have different things together that is nice to work with.
Yeah, remarkable. So your father, Sergey, what an inspirational guy to you, architect, artist. Do you ever reflect, like I reflect back, you know, my father was in World War II, survived Okinawa. You know, listen, if not for the atomic bomb, me and my siblings, we're not here. That's a fact of life. And I think about that often now that he's passed. I thought about it before. Do you ever think about if your dad hadn't moved you to Denmark, what it would have been like growing up in the Ukraine more?
I have. My sister and I was born in Denmark the year after they came. So especially that kind of the story that my father told us was that he was having this kind of cultural center called Sovjart. And at that point, just before, some years before, in 86, Perestroika and Glasnost happened. So obviously the Western world were a bit more attracted to the Eastern world. So in that sense, my father had this cultural kind of group that was invited to Denmark. But just before he was invited to Denmark, or cultural diplomacy in some way, there was a letter from Munich, actually, that they were supposed to go to Munich instead of going to Denmark. So they were talking about Munich, and then this letter came in and it said Denmark in some way. And then the cultural kind of minister said to my father, hey, maybe you should explore Denmark instead of going to Munich. And my father said, well, I don't know much about Denmark, but I'll take Denmark. So, you know, so many things happen of coincidence, and we have our life in Denmark. I have my family. We are so happy to be from Denmark and have lived our life in Denmark with all the kind of inspirational trips to different parts of Europe. So when people ask me, your mom and dad, are they Ukrainian, are they Soviet Union, are they Danish? I would say they're internationalists in some way, because they have always been taking upon that kind of cultural aspect of Europe, of the world, and giving it to us in some way.
All right, that's part one of what a wonderful way to be brought up. We're talking to Eric Svechenko, Houston Dynamo defender. More or less pressure in MLS, and pressure, as we all know, comes in a lot of forms, self-pressure, pressure from the media. More or less pressure in MLS?
Less.
Take me at the pressure at Celtic.
Much more. So it's different. I've thought about it since I've started playing, that it's a different league. It's, you can go unbeaten for four games, then suddenly you go to a place where you lose 3-0 out of nowhere. So there's kind of these rhythms in the league that is a bit more, I can't put it into words what's happening, but it's different. And I would still say that there's not much interest in some way of, I know Houston is a huge city. You have different sports where football isn't the biggest one. So the kind of pressure that's put upon us is coming from the self-pressure that we want to be the best. It's not coming from the media. It's not coming from me hearing a lot of things from the fans. So it's way different than it was in Celtic, because it was evolved around football 24/7. The same in Denmark, that we at Midtjylland was a top team that had to win every single game. So if we lost the game 3-0, it would be all over the media. I would need to go out there and speak as a captain. Why did you lose? You don't feel that the same here. But hopefully it's going to change whenever we're going to be better and better. And now we are in the top four. We want to stay there. We want to go to the playoffs, which then, of course, puts on more pressure when you are in the top. And at some point, you need to tell out loud what your goal are. And I think that also puts on pressure if you want to have a goal out there that's stated, instead of just grinding through it and hoping for something. And of course, Houston Dynamo the last season hasn't been performing as they hoped for. And now we are in a spot where it's in our hands, and we need to grab it.
Playing with Hector Herrera in front of you, and you've played with many, many very good midfielders in front of you in your career. Take me into that. What's it like? Where does it rank amongst some of the others you played with?
No, I think Hector is, I enjoy watching him, and especially knowing that he has been in Atletico Madrid and played at Porto. I actually saw him when I was a young kid. He's not that older than me. So I was maybe 22, 21, and I was in Porto having my surgery, and I went there and watched the Porto against Atletico Madrid in a Europa League game. And I asked Hector if he remember he played, and we checked it online, and he actually played that game. So I saw him playing for Porto at that stadium there. And now to play with him, it's of course, it's nice. And I like the intensity he brings to the game whenever he's on his front foot, and he goes to that repressure, and his vision as well is really, really good. He holds the ball really well. But of course, we need to also remember that Hector cannot do everything by himself. And we need to we need to be a team. And within that team, I think he will be even better and everyone else around will be even better. So at this point, it's great to have him. He's a fun character in the dressing room too. So far it's been a good relationship.
So what have you learned about MLS maybe that you didn't know coming into it? I mean, I know there were a lot of unknowns. Anything that kind of jumps out that's different outside of the weather, the travel, all the basics that generally a foreign player will talk about. Is there something else that jumps out? Maybe the way training is done in this country, whatever.
There's some things I think, especially that kind of closed system is something new for me that the league has so much to say in MLS, which is new for me. Everything has to go through the league. So that kind of creates kind of that the clubs are in the league and then don't have that much to say, which I was very used to in Michelin, for instance. I just went to the CEO and asked him, hey, we need something. Yeah, of course, we'll find out. It's different here. It's something that I need to get used to. And also that kind of trading system. And it's something that for me is new. And the stories that I've heard about how it happens sometimes it's mind blowing. And sometimes I think you got to protect the players even more in some way in a world where you really never know. It's a very short career in football. That's one of the things. And then, of course, all the players that has been different places around MLS, they get to know each other really well and they play against each other. So that camaraderie is something that is new for me in some way, that when we play a game, after a game, we have either won or we lost, then there is a lot of communication within the teams because they know each other. And that's new for me because when I go for a game, it's about winning or losing, nothing else. And I wouldn't even speak to my best friend from Denmark when we had played against them. So that's something that is new for me. But it's a good thing, obviously, because they have had so many things together. So that kind of knowing each other, even though it's a huge country, they know each other really, really well because they've either been in academies, colleges, whatever, and then they play in this league together.
Do you worry about that though a little bit from a competitive standpoint?
Sometimes I do. It's not something that is, I think, is so big of a deal, but it's just something that I need to get used to in some way, that I would celebrate a win with the fans much more than I would stand there and maybe do. But it's something that I also talk with some of the boys and they say to me, listen, it's just something that we are so used to in some way, and it doesn't need to be that we are not caring about winning or losing. It's just a way of it is. And I respect that, of course, 100%. So in general, I think the league is strong, but I also think that the teams that can outthink the other team would win. So so if you could take out all the athleticism and all the attributes of pace and strength, but be the clever team and be in an amazing kind of formation and know how to play, I think that will give you so much success. And that's what we have seen, especially again against LAFC, the two games we played. We played like that and we had success. So that's nice to see that can actually happen here.
Last one before I let you go ahead of the Seattle game this weekend. By the way, Eric and the Dynamo will be at Seattle to take on the Seattle Sounders. This is a great interview here. At home, you know, this has been the best possession team I believe we've ever seen in the history of the club as far as the ability to hold the ball, the likes of Artur, now yourself playing out of the back to them, Hector, Coco. Why doesn't that translate on the road more? Why are you not able to maybe control games on the road more at timely moments with extended possession?
That's a good question. We actually also we had some meetings in regards to after the Austin game where we didn't really succeed in keeping that ball for those moments where we need to. And we talked about the shape, and our shape wasn't the right, where we want to build up with the three. We want to create that kind of box midfield, and if it's shifted or if someone gets into a wrong position, then everything is going to get shifted and then you will be in the wrong positions, wrong angles, not the triangles that we need, and then suddenly we don't get that kind of feeling. That's one of the explanations. The other thing is that sometimes football is not a curve where you just every single game you have the same kind of outcome. Sometimes you have a game where for instance, against Austin's myself, like my diagonal is normally sits right in the chest of my teammate. They all went out of the pitch. So of course, sometimes it happens that you don't get that level you want to, and then you don't get that game you actually were supposed to have in mind. But we need to be aware of that going away, thinking in that shape, doing the same things, and of course being brave. It's down to the thing that you are away from home. You want to really upset the opponent, and that's by being brave. You want to play the passes. You still want to play at home, and it shouldn't change. That's the mindset we need to have.
Eric, wonderful interview. Love it from a hardened pro like yourself. Outstanding career. Really interesting to learn about your father as well. I mean, that I just stumbled onto that, and then I was like, whoa, okay, he's got quite a resume here. It was just very interesting to read about. I want to thank you for coming on. I'd love to have you come on again sometime and really dig into your time at Celtic, because we have so many Celtic fans around the country. And having grown up in New Jersey and near a Scottish area, I kind of was introduced to the whole Celtic history. So thank you so much again, and best of luck against Seattle.
Thank you, Glenn.
All right, let's take a break here of the Best of Soccer Matters, brought to you by Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture. Get in and see our great friend Jan Christensen on Fondren. It's Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, right where you belong.
The ass belongs to me. Welcome to Shawshank.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters. A moment here for Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10, right next to the Marquee Entertainment Center. Go out and see David and Goose in the most authentic soccer pub experience you can get in Houston. The dark wood bars, the huge selection of whiskey offerings, steak night, and all the football soccer matches you want to see. It's Hugh O'Connor's Pub, which is also the home of Houston Liverpool Supporters Group, longtime sponsors of Soccer Matters.
Our next interview, fortunate to have this one. I believe we were just talking off air. We might have done one about 12 years ago, maybe when Pavel was on the Chicago Fire. But Old Par Whiskey brings us the former Mexican international, Bundesliga winner at Stuttgart. He is Pavel Pardo. He joins us now. Pavel, thank you so much for coming on the program. And I know you probably don't remember me, but I remember you. That's for sure. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Dale. Of course, I remember. I remember in one time, a couple of times, but one, as you said, was with a bunch of bags, and you helped get into the hotel. I remember that, always.
It was a good thing I had an SUV then, because you were, I don't know if you were stocking your bar or your cabinets with stemware, but you were buying a lot of stuff at a place called Crate and Barrel in Highland Village. But that was a great fun time.
I was buying a lot of stuff. That one, it was a Old Par Whiskey as well.
there you go. And the interview brought to you by Old Par Whiskey. All right. So I'm really interested to kind of get your thoughts on Mexico under, Jaime Lozano right now.
Yeah, right now, I think the team, for example, yesterday, all the games that I were playing, I was in Dallas as well, enjoying the game, watching the game with, of course, our partner, Old Par. It was really good. I think in this moment, the energy that we have, that the national team shows, is very interesting. I think you can see the players are playing very happy. That for me, this is the most important thing, when the soccer player get into the field and enjoy the game. And that's that I can see right now, this national team with Jimmy Lozano. So the most important, of course, is to playing well, but is the results. And so right now they have the first step to get into the final. And the second step is they have to win the final.
It'll be Mexico and Panama. We're talking to Pavel Pardo, brought to you by Old Par Whiskey. What's the difference between the modern day national team and the national team from the days you played on it?
Well, I think always for me is difficult to compare, you know, because there are different times, different players, different personalities, different characters, because, you know, the one thing for me to get into the national team or to be part of the national team, the most important thing is to have this character, to this, you know, passion for your country, for your nation. And it's difficult, you know, to compare. Oh, I remember this, for example, team or national team in 1998 or 2006 or 1998, because you were in Europe and in France, and we tied in the last minute against the Netherlands, or, you know, we were losing against Belgium and we tied the game, you know, with this powerful, with these great players, Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Jorge Campos, Claudio Suarez, García Aspe, so many players, Luis Hernández. But right now, I think a lot of critics, you know, a lot of, you know, the journalists is, of course, a lot of not good things, because it's normal, because when you have no results, that's what I said, it's difficult, you know. So the players have to understand what is their role. But if you compare right now, for me, I can see again this team in this moment, they have you can see that they are enjoying the game. And then for me, you can see a lot of chances. They create a lot of combinations. In the part of defensive, they are solid right now. So, but that's the most important thing, you know, to create as a team, to play as a team. And every player has the specific role in the positions, but they play as a team right now. That's I can see it right now in this moment.
He's Pavel Pardo, brought to you by Old Par Whiskey. Pavel, the difference between maybe the pressures on players now than even to your time period, which really wasn't that long ago, but the commercialization of the game, the amount of money that's in the game, do you think it's hard for some of these guys that are younger to handle all of this now?
Yeah, I think in one time I said, when in interviews long time, I said, it's very important, you know, the part of the business, because it's important, it's business. But the other part is the balance, that is the part of sport, in this case, soccer. But if you don't have the balance, so one, probably business is more than the sport, and then you're not in a balance. So I think in this moment, they have to think in this balance, you know, the federatives, you know, the directors in charge of this business, of course, to get it. The balance. So, okay, we need to make money. We need to make business. Of course, it's important, but it is important in the para sport, because you are in the same line, you are in the same part, in the same balance. The results is going to be better than right now. So that's the I think that they are focused right now in doing this, and especially with the players. Of course, we have to prepare to develop the young players or the players that they are in the national team, you know, to prepare that you have to, if you are in the national team, of course, you are under pressure always, because it's normal. So any player in any nation, you are under pressure, because you have your nation behind you, waiting, look at you, like, what are you're going to do in the next game. So, but we have to prepare the players as well. We have to give the tools to the players as well, you know. Like, to work for me, I think we have a lot of talent in the Mexican players, but we have to work more in the mindset, for example. This is in my opinion. So, but I think right now they are working in this project. They are working for the next World Cup that we want to have in U.S., in Mexico, in Canada. So, but it's very important. So this is the first step, you know, because it's important, of course, you know, to get the connection, to win. So they have to win, you know, to get, again, this connection with the fans as well.
Pavel Pardo, brought to us by Old Par Whiskey. All right, look, you had 146 caps for Mexico. You played in two World Cups. I mean, this is stuff that people dream of. We realize in America that the U.S. national team, as much as we love our national team, we're probably the second most popular national team here. How did you handle the intense scrutiny of the media, of the pressure that was on you when you were with the Mexican national team? Because somehow you must have had to deflect it and push some of it away, right?
Right, right. No. That's what I said. It's of course, it's difficult, you know, because, you know, you are under pressure. And especially, of course, we have, you know, the rivalry with the U.S., but it's always good, you know, as a sport. But it's always in the nation, because don't forget that we not forget that we have many Mexicans in U.S. as well. So the identity with the national team, with the players, is like, okay, it's part of my country, is part of my life. When I left my country and then came to U.S., you know, to get a better job, a better life, whatever it is, anybody, right? But to handle it is very important, as you said. So that's the point that I said, that we had to prepare in the mindset. If you are good in this part, you can handle all these situations.
Pavel Pardo joining us here. Amazing career. Atlas, Tecos, Stuttgart. We're going to get into a little Stuttgart. Club America, obviously. And then came to Major League Soccer with the Chicago Fire in 2011. I mentioned 146 caps for Mexico. Okay, the upbringing in the game, and at the time you were at Atlas with all these players, and Atlas was considered one of the best at producing young talent. We have a common friend, obviously, Efrain Flores. But just tell me what Atlas meant to you at that time period with Flores, and then, of course, Ricardo La Volpe.
Yeah, of course. And don't forget that before La Volpe was Marcelo Bielsa, that right now is the national coach of Uruguay. In that time, for me, I always said in some interviews, it was like a family. It was like a lot of values, you know. When we started, when I was a young kid with my dream to be as a professional soccer player, and as you said, it was an amazing academy, youth academy, with a lot of development with the players, and you can see in the last captains of the national team, we came from Atlas. Osvaldo Sánchez, Andrés Guardado, Rafa Márquez, Jared Borghetti, so many, many players. And it was a fantastic job with the Fred Flores, José Luis Real in that time, you know. It was a great moment. And now when it's different times, and it was the championship and then the second championship B, you know, the championship, it was amazing for us as a fan, of course, because we were as a fan. And I remember that time in the first championship, I was in the stadium with my family, and it was amazing. We cried, everybody. But the second, it was, you know, sitting in my couch with my family, very calm, with a nice drink, with, of course, don't forget all part, you know, it was and enjoy the game with my fantastic drink that is a ginger ale with all part, and then, you know, enjoy the game. And of course, when your team wins, you know, it's just a fantastic, that is the perfect life.
Stuttgart, let me take you into Stuttgart, because this was an amazing time period in your career. Not many Mexican players have gone to Europe and had a success and won a Bundesliga title. This is an amazing moment. You went there with Ricardo Osorio, but I mean, you're on a team with Sammy Khedira, Mario Gomez, and all these guys. Just take me into the whole experience in the Bundesliga, how you had to adapt, and how maybe the culture, not only on the field, but off the field, you know, kind of shaped you, and how you had to adapt to that in Germany.
Well, it's true, as you said. It was a fantastic time. Ricardo Nosorio, after the World Cup, we came in Bundesliga, we came in Stuttgart. You know, the expectation, it was in the beginning, you know, like we came, what are you doing here? Two Mexicans in the Bundesliga. I remember the first conference room, I was in the conference. And it was amazing. It was amazing because I said, "Hey, listen, I'm here. I'm with to win, you know, the championship." And then all the journalists said, "Hey, listen, what are you thinking?" I said, "My dream is to win the Bundesliga. My dream is to get in the Champions League." And they said, "Hey, listen, how are you going to do that? Because probably you are crazy." You know, in the mind of the journalist, they said, "These guys, these Mexicans are crazy." I said, "Of course I know the Bundesliga. I know the leagues. I know Bayern Munich. I know Borussia Dortmund. I know Hamburg. In that time, it was at the top. Werder Bremen. So many teams." I said, "That is my dream." And it was crazy. And then I remember when it was like a very close in the end of the season, that we have long seasons, and very, very close to win the championship. And it was amazing. The journalist came to me and he said, "Pavel, remember the first day that you said this, okay, we are very close, you know, to get in the, or to win the championship." It was an amazing time. I learned, of course, the language, that is very, in the beginning, it was very tough for me. And I said, "Hey, listen, I have to learn, you know, the German language." And honestly, it was the best time in my life, you know, to live there, to stay there, to, of course, to get in the Bundesliga. And it was amazing.
2007, Pavel wins the Bundesliga title. I remember watching that on TV the last day, and it was amazing. I was pulling for you guys to win that thing. And you actually captained Stuttgart as well, which is pretty amazing. The holding midfield position, the position you play. I mean, I remember your set pieces and the way you strike a ball, but the number six position, the holding position, does that seem like it has evolved a little bit to you in the modern game now with the way modern football is played?
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, as you said, I think in that time, in my position as a holding midfielder or as a number six, as you said, I think it was in the very advanced, you know, in that time, because it was, of course, when the defensive, it was not the really defensive, only middle field, you know, like a very defensive, but it was, you know, the connection when we had the ball, when we had the position of the ball, you know, to create more, you know, the connection as a midfielder to the offensive, to get in the, like deep passes or like set pieces. Like in that time, of course, it was amazing. I think it was the success as well when I was in Germany, you know, because not all the players in that position, they have these characteristics, you know, with a good pass, with set pieces, or you can get in deep passes. And I think I totally agree with you in that part.
Pavel Pardo joining us, brought to you by Old Par Whiskey. We really appreciate this. After Stuttgart, obviously, you go to legendary Club America. How about a few words on your time at Club America?
Well, when I was in Club America, like you said, one of the biggest clubs in Mexico, but of course in Latin America. When you ask a player not in Mexico, but always, I mean, also in South America, they know Club America. We were playing Copa Libertadores as well, and this is one of the biggest clubs, and everybody knows us. Oh, America in Mexico, yeah, it's a big club, because we played as well Copa Libertadores. So it was a great time, because after Atlas, I just go through by Tecos, so 1 year, and then went to Club America. And Club America was one of the best seasons as well. We won two championships. I remember when I came to America, we were waiting 13 years without championship. You know, it was a tough time because it was, you know, America is big team, a lot of championships in the beginnings or in the eras of 80s, and of course, you know, we were under pressure all the time. I said, okay, but right now, no titles, and we're waiting. So 13 years, 13 years without titles, and it was difficult that time. And we get one in 2002, and then the other one it was in 2005. So for me, it was an amazing time because the 2005, it was in the beginning of the World Cup in 2006. We play as World Copa Confederaciones. It was a great Confederations Cup with the national team, and then it was the World Cup. So after World Cup, and then I play in Stuttgart. But the time in America, it was fantastic because we had players like Iván Zamorano, you know, playing Real Madrid, playing in Inter Milan, Piojo López, that was playing in Valencia, Lazio, America. Such a great players and great human beings. And it was one of the best times as well in my career.
Pavel, thank you very much for joining us on behalf of Old Par Whiskey. Now, you said you like it with ginger ale. Is that the way to go, Old Par?
I have to say, always these kind of titles. If you don't drink a whiskey, Old Par, with the drink ginger ale, a little squeeze the orange, you know, and just drink it, it's amazing. You have to try it.
You got me thinking about it right now. I will try it. Pavel, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Not only an unbelievable soccer player, you're a good pitch man, too, for Old Par.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate your words.
That does it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, and I hope, as always, you enjoyed the show. What a week for international soccer in Houston with the Dynamo Santos League Cup and the Manchester United-Real Madrid match. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, as usual, the Daskett Law Firm. They are bringing you soccer coverage on the radio. Also, to Guillermo Lazo Romero, producer and Andrew Carlson. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast of this show on Spotify, Google, Apple, or get it right here on ESPN975.com. Soccer Matters hats and t-shirts, LamontBrands.com, all to benefit the 501c charity Snowdrop Foundation. Give me a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davisock, Facebook Soccer Matters. Until next Thursday, remember, soccer matters.
You found ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can feel it.
I can feel it all the way down in my plums, getting all swollen with a light blue hue to them, fresh and juicy, ready for the picking.